Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Thursday, the 23rd of February. Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program live from Bonn, Germany. I am Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura with some of your comments on social media.
Coming up, Cameroon forces Nigerian refugees to return to Nigeria, but why?
Cameroon has a delicate balancing act of ensuring its security prerogatives to secure its territory, to secure its citizens, and at the same time to respect its international obligations.
And scientists discover new seven planets which could be suitable for human habitation.
Is actually the first time that they've found so many around one particular star. So that's what makes this find absolutely incredible.
And we shall be looking at some of your comments on that topic.
But first, let's hear what's been happening around the world.
I'm Brandon Conradis with DW News. UN-sponsored talks resumed in Geneva on Thursday in an effort to bring an end to the more than five-year-old conflict in Syria.
Am I expecting a breakthrough? No, I'm not expecting a breakthrough. But I'm expecting and determined for keeping a very proactive momentum.
The talks came the same day Turkey-backed rebels said that they had liberated the key northern city of Al-Bab from the so-called Islamic State. Al-Bab is the last remaining stronghold of the Islamic State in Syria. Militants first took the city, which is located in the province of Aleppo, in late 2013. Authorities in the German state of Lower Saxony said that they had arrested a 26-year-old Salafist for allegedly plotting a terrorist attack. State prosecutors said they found bomb-making materials in the man's apartment in the town of Northeim. The arrest came a day after the German government released statistics noting a dramatic increase in the country's number of Islamic extremists. Police in Nigeria said on Thursday that two German archaeologists had been kidnapped by unknown gunmen from Kaduna in the north of the country, where the men had been working for a decade. Police spokesman Aliyu Usman said that an investigation to locate the men is currently underway.
They have embarked on rescue mission in the area. Right now, our point of interest is the safe return of these kidnapped victims and their reunion with their family. And we are hoping very soon we are going to have a very good result.
The two men were reportedly part of a four-man team visiting from a university in Frankfurt in collaboration with the Archaeological Center in Kagarko. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. A court in the Philippines issued an arrest warrant for one of President Rodrigo Duterte's most vocal critics on Thursday. Former Justice Minister Laila de Lima faces accusations that she accepted bribes from prison inmates. However, de Lima managed to avoid arrest on Thursday by seeking refuge in the Senate. De Lima has repeatedly spoken out against Duterte's so-called drug war, in which more than 7,000 people have been killed. Government troops in Iraq have retaken an airport as they fight to retake the city of Mosul from the so-called Islamic State terrorist group. The Iraqi military said on Thursday it was closing in on the group in an effort to oust it from its last stronghold in the city. The terrorist organization first took complete control of Mosul in June 2014. Mexican leaders expressed outrage on Thursday over the Trump administration's new immigration policies. Mexican Foreign Minister Luis Videgaray and human rights activists have taken issue with Washington's plans to deport back to Mexico all illegal immigrants who entered from that country, regardless of their nationality. Their criticism comes as Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Homeland Security Chief John Kelly are in Mexico City to meet with the country's officials to discuss the plans. Somalia's new president Mohamed Abdullahi appointed a new prime minister on Thursday. Hassan Ali Hera is a former head of regional operations for the Norwegian Refugee Council. His appointment comes just as Somalia faces a worsening drought. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Brandon Conradis.
This is DW Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura with your latest comments on the social media.
Now, over 500 Nigerians who fled into northern Cameroon to escape Boko Haram Islamists have been forced to go back. According to UNHCR, 517 Nigerians were expelled, including 313 who had requested asylum. Cameroon has been fighting the Boko Haram Jihad group in its far north region for the last 3 years. Roslyn Okoro is deputy representative of UNHCR in Cameroon. I've been speaking to her about the fate of the refugees, and I started by asking her why this is happening now.
Cameroon has to do a delicate balancing act of ensuring its security prerogative to secure its territory, to secure its citizens, and at the same time to respect its international obligations.
We understand that the humanitarian crisis has strained Cameroon's government and aid agencies as well, but I would like to hear from you just how bad the situation is in the camps.
I think the conditions in Minawao refugee camp are actually are quite good. Definitely, the resources we get do not often match up to our expectations or to our requirements. And that means much of the needs of the refugees are not necessarily met.
UNHCR plans to sign an accord with Cameroon and Nigeria for the voluntary return of some 85,000 Nigerian refugees. Now, this is due to take place on 2nd March. Is this to suggest that northern Nigeria is now safe?
It is, because we carried out a return intention surveys and we discovered that about 76% of the refugees are willing to go back to Nigeria.
I was speaking to Roslyn Okoro of UNHCR Cameroon, and Celia Froelich has been exploring a video showing atrocities committed by Boko Haram and now shares her findings.
The sound of gunfire echoes through the trees. Houses have been destroyed, fields are burning. Easily recognizable Boko Haram fighters make their way through the destruction they have caused and spread fear throughout the nation. Their leader tells them they will have to kill, that they will become murderers, and that they will die in the battle. The fighters of Boko Haram were filmed by other members of the militant group in Kamshi in northern Nigeria. The footage was confiscated by the Nigerian military and passed on to US broadcaster Voice of America. It was recorded during Boko Haram's heyday in 2014 and 2015 and includes scenes of public executions. A man gets dragged to the center of his village, with all villagers forced to watch, children included. They have to shout, "God is great," during the filming, or risk being singled out as traitors. All Boko Haram fighters are armed. They hold their flag. Then, one of them executes the man and the crowd starts screaming. Such systematic killings demonstrate the cold-blooded power of the militant group over the local population. The group terrorized their victims in public, whipping some or chopping their hands off. Almost 2 million people fled the northern area of Nigeria during those 2 years. By now, Boko Haram has killed over 20,000 people.
Celia Froelich reporting, and we stay within the region, but this time round in Nigeria, where the police has launched a manhunt to rescue two German archaeologists believed to have been kidnapped by Boko Haram in Kaduna State. The spokesperson of the Nigerian police, Jimo Moshod, told journalists that it won't be too long before the victims are rescued. From Abuja, Uwesu Idris reports.
The two German archaeologists were kidnapped while working on relics of the Nok culture, an early Iron Age population whose material remains are named after the Han village of Nok in Nigeria. According to the police, the two were working without appropriate security. Two of the local support staff who were with them at the time of the kidnap were killed by the gunmen. The spokesperson of the Nigerian police in Abuja, Jimo Moshood, told reporters that the police have launched an intensive manhunt of the gunmen and have deployed police special forces comprising of the Technical Intelligence Unit, the Anti-Kidnapping Unit, and police helicopter surveillance, working in close collaboration with the Kaduna police.
For the purpose of the safety of the victim, I won't give you the details of what has been achieved so far so that we can have success without any delay in this regard. Because the kidnap occurred earlier out of the morning and deployment was done yesterday. And as I'm speaking with you down the ground, the police helicopter is surveying and combing all the mountainous and difficult terrain to ensure that we rescue this victim.
Malam Isa Tijani, an analyst, told DW that the kidnappings indicate a deterioration of security in Kaduna State.
It is most unfortunate. I felt highly disturbed by the news when I heard that two Germans were abducted. This is not painting our own country in good light. The Germans, in any case, not even the Germans, everybody in Nigeria is supposed to live freely and move about freely. These Germans came in as partners in progress with the government and people of Nigeria. To therefore be subjected to this kind of horrendous act of kidnap, to me, is most unfortunate.
Abduction of foreigners occur regularly in West African nation. They are usually conducted by criminal gangs demanding ransom.
Uweso Idrus reporting. Now, how about life elsewhere not on planet Earth? Well, that could be a possibility. And why? Because scientists at the NASA Center have discovered 7 new Earth-like planets. It's not the first time astronomers have found Earth-like planets outside our solar system. In 2016, scientists discovered 3 planets with the potential for human habitation. Now, to tell us more about this discovery, DW's Jesse Wingard from our science desk joined me in the studio. Jesse.
Now, while it isn't the first time that astronomers have made Earth-like or have discovered Earth-like planets outside our solar system, it is actually the first time that they've found so many around one particular star. So that's what makes this find absolutely incredible.
What's unique about these planets?
There's 3 planets which could, and I stress could, scientists don't know, could be home to water and life. So these planets are about the same size as the Earth or just a little bit smaller. Mm-hmm. Planets are called simply 1B, 1C, 1D, right up to 1H. Mm-hmm. And they don't know yet what their orbit consists of. So that's something that they also have to look into now that they know that the planets are there. But that's one thing that scientists are going to start concentrating on. What's really exciting here is scientists are confident it's not a matter of whether we will find life on another planet. But when? But when, exactly.
That's very interesting. Now, I'm curious to know what next after this exciting discovery.
Next year, the James Webb Space Telescope will launch. That will succeed the current Hubble Telescope, which is up there at the moment. So hopefully that will be able to tell us a little bit more about the 7 planets. So scientists think that if they do find traces of methane, oxygen and ozone simultaneously on any one of those 7 planets, then scientists predict that we might know if there is life other than what life that we know here on Earth within the next 10 years.
DW's Jesse Wingard from our science department. And I'm sure, Nyambura, there must be something that people have been talking about about this topic.
Of course, we have a lot of comments. Abdul Rashid Ibrahim from Nigeria's Federal University of Technology asks, can human beings go there and survive without any disturbance? Some think it's ridiculous. For example, Chaku Ezeogu says, what I really think, comedians. Mayera C. Diaz Ramirez from Puerto Rico said, if you have made a mess of planet Earth with global warming as a fact, can we do better elsewhere? I should hope so. Samit Verma from India wrote that the new planets are almost 240 trillion kilometers away and that will take like 20,000 years to travel one light year. For the time being, enjoy hearing these discoveries while having a sip of coffee.
That's interesting, isn't it? Enjoying with a sip of coffee. What else are people talking about?
Well, I'll have more later on xenophobia attacks.
And is that all that we have about this topic? I thought when we're having a discussion, said there's quite a lot. I also find it quite fascinating that there are new discoveries taking place. And I must confess, I'm one of those people who would be interested in going to live on another planet. How about you?
Well, I think that will take time. As you've heard, it will take like years to get there. So at the time being, let's enjoy living here on planet Earth and making it better.
But I'm interested that I find it really intriguing that the world of science is fascinating, new discoveries every now and then. And I know that many comments are flowing on our Facebook page. And certainly Nyambura will be bringing you that at a little time. You're listening to DW Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany, with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura, with your comments on the social media.
Now, coming up, fears engulf Nigerians in South Africa as xenophobic attacks increase. Now, this is happening because South Africans accuse them of peddling drugs and running brothels. Several Nigerians have seen their property destroyed in the past weeks. The South African government has condemned the attack and called on its nationals to report all incidences to police. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
A recent wave of deadly violent attacks against Nigerian nationals in South Africa has left many of them traumatized, forcing the South African government to speak out. At a press conference today, South African Home Affairs Minister Malusi Gigaba made it clear that the government was strongly opposed to the recent attacks and called on the police to put a stop to them.
There will be no progressive and sustainable victory in xenophobic violence. Opportunistic individuals who partake in it erode the human face we have struggled very hard to acquire. We are first and foremost humans. This reality cannot be diluted by your country of origin or what documents you hold or lack thereof.
The government has arranged a meeting with African Union ambassadors to inform them about the steps it's taking to stop further attacks. This follows comments by the Nigerian government calling on the AU to intervene. In the Rosettenville suburb in Johannesburg, community members took to the streets to protest against crime in the area. 12 houses occupied by Nigerian nationals were targeted and torched. Community members accused the occupants of either using them as drug dens or brothels. The attacks later on spread to Pretoria, where 2 houses and 30 cars belonging to Nigerian nationals were torched. Over 24 of shops belonging to foreign nationals were also looted. A Nigerian national working at the panel beating shop that was burnt down, who only wanted to be identified as Oke, says he now lives in fear.
They come and burn our shop here. It's almost 30-something cab that they burn here. And you don't know what is the problem. And they are busy fighting with us. I don't know. They are saying foreigner must go. And you don't know what happened.
But South African national Teresa Zwane says they have had enough trouble from the Nigerian nationals.
They're selling the trash to our children. They're making our children a prostitute. So we are tired of them. They must go.
We must go.
They must go. Because we report, they don't do nothing to you.
But the police accused by foreign nationals of not offering enough protection are not convinced Nigerians are the only ones behind the alleged criminal activities. Matapelo Peter is the spokesperson for police in the Gauteng province.
Just in Rosettenville alone, since last year, we have arrested over 400 suspects, and a fair percentage of these suspects were actually South Africans. Now, we do not know if there's any mischief in the allegations that these people could be foreign nationals.
Meanwhile, tomorrow, Friday, there is a planned march in the Pretoria suburb of Mamelodi to protest against the presence of foreign nationals in the country. Minister Gigaba says he has engaged the protest organizers and asked the police to be out in full force to ensure the march does not degenerate into violent attacks on immigrants.
Tuso Kumalo in Johannesburg. Now, Nyambura, is that one of the topics that people have been talking about on our social media?
Yes, we have a lot of reactions on the xenophobic attacks. Bella Ishayuku from University of Maiduguri says he comes from Nigeria and he is condemning the attacks against Nigerians and burning their shops by the citizens of South Africa. The hashtag xenophobia is top trending in South Africa with over 5,000 tweets.
Really?
Yes.
That's quite a big number, isn't it?
Yes, mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Musie Shibotu from Eritrea wrote, "Dear South Africa, once we cried for the pain caused on you, but now we are crying for the pain you cause." And as City Press Online, an agenda-setting publication in South Africa, says, "Xenophobia is a war of poor against poor."
Interesting comments there, but I suppose we shall come back to that a little later. But first,
use on.
Now, the Pan-African Film Festival, popularly known as FESPACO, is kicking off on Saturday the 25th in Burkina Faso capital Ouagadougou. The festival is the highlight for African cinema. It is here that African filmmakers have the chance to present their movies and creativity. Now, one of them is Mante Goftov Sileshe. He is a reporter with DW's Amharic department, and his short film Kereta was awarded the best international short film at the River Film Festival in Padua, Italy in 2015. Before his trip to West Africa, Paul Yeager had a chance to take a closer look at Sileshe's career.
A man is running, chased by a furious mob. His fast breath mirrors panic. He fears for his life. In Amharic, Gereta means mob, but also confusion. The film title suggests that filmmaker Mante Goftov Sileshe Siyum wants to tell more than just a simple story.
That's the first layer of the concept. When you go deep in the story is not about just, you know, stealing and then trying to feed his daughter and then chased away by mobs. So I want to, you know, transmit this kind of concept through this chasing, but the main point is not chasing.
Nothing in the film happens out of coincidence. There's a reason and a deeper meaning for everything. The amazingly vivid scenery emanates from Mante Goftov's mind, but his stories portray the daily life of many people in the poorer areas of Addis Ababa. Mante Goftov, or Manti as he likes to be called, had to overcome a lot of obstacles while he was shooting Gereta.
When I say it's difficult, it's not because of the craft, but because of, you know, external things. Like, as a journalist, my daily bread is come from journalism. So mainly I work as a journalist, so I need to have a fund. So, but this film has done without an external fund. And the second point is time, because you are a journalist, all the day you are here, so you need to spare time.
Before the 37-year-old Ethiopian came to Germany in 2007, he worked as a film director in his hometown. But his wish to study at a German university brought him to Bonn. Now, 10 years later, the Rhineland has become his second home, where he lives with his wife and their two daughters. In the Amharic department at Deutsche Welle, Manti is responsible for reports about various countries in Africa. As of now, filming is a hobby. But in terms of both fields, there's no doubt what really counts for him.
My audience has a priority because, you know, I think it works for all. If your audience are not your priority, that means that you cannot fulfill what they want.
An example which probably best describes the impact of Manti's work was an encounter at the premiere of Gereta at Deutsche Welle in Bonn. After the film, a man went up to Manti.
This guy told me that, hey, this is my story. Where do you get it? It's my hurt. I felt like I'm in the film. He said that. This is my story, he told me. I'm from East Africa, from Ethiopia. He's from West Africa. And he told me that this is a story of my own. So people who are in the West Africa, Burkina Faso, should see this film. Other African people should watch this film, he said.
Paul Yeager with that very interesting story.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
You're listening to DW Africa Link.
Speaking out.
Now, a climate of hate and fear is looming in Tanzania after the government threatened to publish a list of names of people believed to be homosexuals. The crackdown has come as a surprise because Tanzania is regarded as a tolerant country. Jen Nyingi presents a report by Martina Shikovsky.
The latest move by Tanzania comes just days after the government shut down dozens of AIDS clinics that is accused of promoting homosexuality. It's believed that nearly a quarter gay or bisexuals in Tanzania are HIV positive. Defending the government's move, Deputy Health Minister Hamisi Kigwala said they will still have access to medical services like any other person.
Tanzania hatujawahi kumbagua mtu yeyote yule. In Tanzania, we have never discriminated against any person, be it a criminal or a murderer. Whoever falls sick gets medical attention. That's human rights, and it is protected by the constitution of our country. So the clinics that are closed are community-based centers, and there are 40 of them. But in general, we have over 4,000 clinics that offer services to HIV-positive people.
The lesbians, gay, bisexuals, and transgender community has not experienced high level of violence and discrimination in Tanzania, like in neighboring Uganda, Kenya, and Zimbabwe. In these countries, homosexuals have suffered abuse and violent attacks. Amnesty International's regional director for East Africa, the Horn and the Great Lakes, Mudhoni Wanyeki, says the current move by the Tanzanian government will fuel more hatred, violence, and increased mob lynching.
Well, it's actually hard to explain because it doesn't seem to be in line with Tanzania's general sense of tolerance and equality. It's an executive that seems to be pulling in two different directions, and I would say this is one manifestation of that clampdown on civic space. So obviously it's creating a climate of fear and contributing, like I said, to this perception that Tanzania is going backwards.
A report by Martina Shikovsky. And now I will ask Nyambura to take us one more time on with our comments from social media.
Well, we have a lot today, and we've been talking about the xenophobic attacks. And Woman Without Chains trending on Twitter handle, Etabi says, Julius Malema said it all in 6 words, fight crime and not fellow Africans. Karapse Maloba from South Africa, quoting South Africa Home Affairs Minister, who today spoke about it, says those committing crime should not be profiled by nationality, but law and constitutional guidelines.
That's an interesting one, isn't it?
Yes. In fact, that is an issue because he's saying that being profiled by nationality and not by law is what is causing the problem in South Africa. Yeah. Then you have Cleo Kanza from South Africa who wrote, some thugs are just using the word to complete their moves to rob spaza shops and killing innocent people. And to wrap up, King Quitter urges Twitter activists who says are all talk but no action to go and tweet revolution and just practice, which he says they should not just practice, but which is called dololo, which in South Africa means doing nothing about it.
Yeah, xenophobic attacks is an interesting topic, and I'm sure there are quite lots of comments coming on from our social media desk there. Please keep them flowing. But first, Nyambura, tell me what else people have been talking. I know that our social media is flowing full of comments, and I'm eager to hear what people say.
Well, of course, we have a lot, especially on the issue of homosexuality in Tanzania. And there's a lot of animosity on that subject. We saw it on the comments on our social media. Sally Mwanga from Mwanga, Tanzania says, homosexuality has no place in Tanzania nor in Africa. Westerners will try hard to make Africa leave this folly stuff, but they cannot force the legalization of homosexuality. A sentiment backed by Essien Samuel, who says gayism has no place in Africa. Dida Musa Goni from Kaduna lauds President Magufuli for doing the right thing and saving his country from moral bankruptcy.
Nyambura, those are all very, rather from my own opinion, negative comments. Are there no people coming giving us positive comments about that?
You're right. Not everyone agrees with this. For example, we have Chris Maliongovi from Makerere University who asks, who on earth still heavily punishes people for using their own bodies as they choose or should? This is unacceptable and will stop. A position backed by Valerio Pinatle from Rome, Italy, he asks, why is it so hard to respect each other just as humans? Whatever God we believe in, whoever we love, whatever continent we live in, we are made of the same matter. Don't you think the world is already full of wars, misery, and intolerance?
Very, very interesting comments there, but we have to leave it at that, Nyambura. That's all we had for you in today's program. From me, Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And I'm Nzipora Nyambura.
Thank you for listening, and do follow us on Facebook as well as on dw.com/Africa.